Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and I'm looking for answers. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to have a good, well-lived life? This podcast is conversations with people that look like they have it sorted.
Hello and welcome to the program. My guest today is Carla Young. Now, she is a Twitter connection from the time when people had conversations on the platform. And yes, it is still possible to have conversations on Twitter, but that is a different topic. I have followed Carla on various social media channels and have always appreciated her dry wit and sharp writing. She's a freelance technical writer. Maybe there's a theme there somewhere. I don't realise quite how many of my connections had writing as part of their business model. What comes over in our conversation is that Carla has designed her business to fit in with her life. She does not really do compromise. If it does not fit, it goes. She is living proof that a woman can have it all and then some. She has built multiple businesses on a virtual work-at-home model and is an example to anyone looking to start a lifestyle business. During her early days as a mother and entrepreneur, by her own admission, she made every mistake in the book and then a few more for good measure. She realised that doing it all was unhealthy and unsustainable. So she started by getting organised to the extreme, developing support systems for both her work and family life. Carla is a writer for hire in the technical space. She can make your pipes or sprockets shine and sound interesting. However, at the time of our conversation, she was on a writing sabbatical from the technical stuff, taking time out to complete a work of fiction. As you will hear, it is a different process, but at 75,000 words, the project is well on the road to completion. In her own words, she's a badass and does things her own way. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Carla Young.
Hello, Carla Young.
Hello.
We made it. Technology kind of tried to defeat us, but it didn't quite manage it. So this is Life, Passion and Business. And what's so fantastic about this podcast is I get to speak to people who I have known for a long time. Because I used to remember when we used to tweet deck together. Quite a few years ago now, and you know when the API used to stop and used to get grounded.
Yes, that happens.
I remember that one. Anyway, look, this is Life, Passion and Business, and I started this podcast because I have reached a certain point in my life where I have more questions than I have answers. And so what I started to do is to kind of, well, I could reach out to people who look like they probably have it sorted. And so I'm reaching out to my old contacts, and you are one of them. So, Carla, tell me, how did you get to where you are now?
That's a big question, isn't it? The shortish answer to the long story is I was working in a corporate environment, like many of us, and discovered I don't play well with others. And so the corporate environment sort of spat me out. And I found myself, you know, sort of at this crossroads. And I was looking for a different job. And a company wanted to hire me, but they didn't get all the internal approvals. But they really needed help. So they said, hey, can you just write some newsletter articles for us? And we'll pay you as a contractor. And the rest, as they say, is history. I was in my pajamas in my home office, and I said to myself, whatever happens, I have got to figure out how to make this work, because I never want to go back. I love this. This is great. And then I picked up some freelance writing gigs for local publications, and I was in Starbucks working, and I'm like, this is really awesome. I love this. This is great. And I, you know, and then 15 years later, I don't even know how long it's been, something like that, I still, you know, work, you know, from a home office, oftentimes in my pajamas. I work in Starbucks. I have brought my work along if I'm traveling, and I have my computer and I open it up and I can, you know, do a little bit of work and get paid for it. And I'm like, this is it. And so I've sort of said to myself and others, I've ruined my ability to then go and get an office job, because I would be like, you know, I can imagine the job interview, and it would be like, so close.
Yeah, they wouldn't let you in your pajamas, would they? You just couldn't call that one off, really.
Yeah, no, it would be like, oh, dude, close every day? Are you sure? Really? Like, what if they're fancy pajamas? Like, yeah.
So this was 15 years ago. You were spat out of corporate.
Yeah, and I was very, started... very, very young. Just kidding.
We're as young as we are. That is what it is. But I mean, like, so you were spat out of corporate, as you said, and you start. So did you kind of put your shingle out and start promoting yourself? Or what did you do?
Well, actually, that's a funny and interesting story, because I had really no idea what to do. So I talked to another writer, and I said, so how did you make it work as a freelancer? And she said, well, I just let everybody know that I was now out independent. And then, you know, I got business from there. And I was like, well, that's going to be a really short day, because I was internal corporate. So I really had no connections. So I let the three people that I knew, hey, I'm working as a freelance writer now.
So what industry were you in? Just to kind of fill out a bit more color to what you were doing. What industry?
I was working as a technical writer. And so I only worked with internal people. And so then I said, well, this isn't going to work. And so somebody said, well, networking. Great. Okay. I'll do that. And so in the first year that I was in business, I went to every business luncheon, networking breakfast, networking clubs, you know, after hours corporate mixers, you know.
Where do you live? Whereabouts in the world?
Well, at the time I was in Calgary. So I actually went to a lot of techie functions that, you know, served the tech, little tech hub in Calgary. Okay. And so I would say probably in that first year, I met and networked with about 1,000 people.
Wow.
And then...
Is Calgary got a big community that you can network with?
Oh, yeah, it does. And okay. It's a huge entrepreneurial community. And from that sort of initial effort of, hi, my name is... again and again and again and again, I then had a critical mass of people who knew that what I did. And in that time, I kind of invented who I was as a freelancer, because I worked with technical companies. So I became a specialist in working in creating marketing material for technical companies. So it was a unique niche, so to speak. Like there was lots of freelance writers who could write fluffy stuff, but when it came down to, you know, hey, if you got a room full of geeks that need to have what they're doing explained to the outside world, I'm your girl.
If you can write about valves and sprockets, you've probably got an edge on most people, I would have thought.
Yes, and so that was my specialty, still is. And even now, I have people from the old days of my networking calling me up and saying, "Hey, are you still writing? I have a technical company that needs some help." And so that that ability to sort of, you know, interview the subject matter expert and say, "Okay, so explain this technology to me," and then ask those questions and dive deeper and deeper and get to the part where there's a value proposition for the non-technical person who's going to be buying it. So that was my career that I invented for myself. Because so, I don't want to work in clothes and would rather wear pajamas.
Well, that's good. I think that's a very good goal to set and an aspiration to meet, said he, reaching for words. Were you passionate about this stuff?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. True story, not every topic is created equal. I once, and I tell this story often, when people are saying, "I have to write about something and it's really boring." And I'm like, I once had to spit shine the topic of oil field tubular goods. And I'm interviewing my client and saying, "Well, what makes your oil field tubular goods better than other people's oil field tubular goods?" And he's like, "Well, nothing. They're a commodity." And I'm like, "Ah, okay." And then I said, "Well, is there something else that makes it better?" And we eventually got to a value proposition where he actually had an advantage in how he managed his supply chain, etc. But I literally, and this was probably a decade ago that I wrote about oil field tubular goods, but I remember, and it's if you don't know what oil field tubular goods are, they're the tubes, the pipes, the things.
Yes.
Anyway,
it must be, yes.
Riveting topic. I was like, okay, I gotta write this copy. I'm gonna put a chocolate bar on my desk, and when I'm done, I get it. Sometimes you have to bribe yourself, but for the most part, I find it interesting and challenging, and trying to find the right balance of, you know, really that little gem, that little spark, that connection, where you can go, someone's going to read this and they're going to go, "Oh, I have been looking for this solution. This is what I need."
So moving forward in time, did you create a business around this, like a company per se with other people, or have you always worked on your own?
Well, refer back to not playing well with others. And I did sort of. What I actually created was sort of a morphing kind of group of people. So, and I still do this today. If a client comes to me and they say, "We need a brochure," although they don't say that very often because nobody does brochures anymore, or if they say, "We need a website," and they would say to me, "Oh, but do you have somebody who can really jazz up our logo?" And I'm like, "Not me." And so then I had sort of favorite people who I'd work with, and we would sort of bunch together to put in a unified proposal for the client so we could work together seamlessly. But it sort of became, not a company per se, but just sort of people who work together, you know, on a project basis.
I had a sense you had a publication. I thought wasn't there a magazine that you write?
Yes, that is completely different from what I do.
Do during the day. Do you want to say more about that one then? Because this is, as I said, this life, passion, and business, and I'm just curious about how people package all that stuff together.
Actually, it came about by accident. I had another, because business came first. I started the business before I became a mom. And I had another mom say to me, "Oh, I really, really envy you you have all this freedom. You don't have to, you know, go back to work. You can sort of design your work life around parenting. I wish I could do that. And I'm like, well, you can. Oh, no, 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 no. But. And from that little conversation, that spark, I thought, well, I need to kind of create something that talks to other moms and says, yes, you can. And here are the tools, here are the tips. So we put together Mom EO magazine with that idea. And so we gathered together articles and resources and tips and how-tos and all the things you would need to do, because of course, being, you know, at that time, you know, a good chunk of time into my freelance career, I had a lot I learned the hard way, the starting from I know nothing way. So I had to learn how to network. I had to learn how to attract clients. I had to learn how to manage terrible clients. I had to learn how to fire clients. So I took all of that information and experience and mistakes and learnings, and we packaged it into the magazine.
So where does your passion sit today? Is it with the magazine or with your writing career?
Well, it sits all over the place. You know, I would say where my passion sits is with being an entrepreneur. And, you know, and I've thought about this a lot in you know, the past, oh gosh, I guess since I had my daughter, 13 years, when I think about, well, what do I want her to grow up? Like, I have a say, but, you know, imagine a scenario where I have a say. And the thing I always come back to is I kind of want her to become an entrepreneur, because I think the sort of power of potential in being an entrepreneur. I'm not dependent on a company being successful and landing the project and getting enough business in the door to keep me sitting at my desk. I know if I want to be busier, if I want more clients, if I want more work, I can go out there and I can network and I can knock on doors and I can market myself and I can, you know, reach out to people who I'd like to work with. And I can create those opportunities for myself as a freelancer. Or if I want to go and create a product, I've watched lots of my entrepreneurial friends. I can do that. I can create that opportunity for myself. And I think that's really powerful. That didn't really answer your question though, did it?
No, not really. But, you know, it's as I said to you before, it's your story. It's how you bring this stuff together, really. It's not about me. What I am interested in is when we spoke initially, you said you were on sabbatical at the moment and you were writing. So what led you to take some time out from your career or your writing career to say, OK, I'm going to write? Could you write anyway?
Yeah, you know, well, it's kind of been one of those, I would say, unconquered peaks for me. It's the adventure, the challenge, the thing I've never done. I've spent, you know, 15 years writing on demand about many things. Oil field tubular goods, for example.
Yes. Oh, it's very good.
And you know, and you get good at it and you get so that you can do it quickly and there's processes and then you sort of feel like, oh gosh, but when way back when the dream of being a writer wasn't necessarily, the dream of being a corporate writer, mostly because I didn't realize that existed. And so I decided to take a bit of, as you said, a sabbatical and work on writing a novel. And it's all the things it sounds like it should be. It is fun and invigorating and frustrating and challenging. And it's, you know, so there's a lot of learning that goes into that, because of course, being good at reading novels is not the same as being good at writing novels. And you're like, I know what a good novel looks like, because I've read good ones and bad ones and all of that. And then you go sit down to write and you kind of get this dial tone. You're like,
do you need a chocolate bar on the desk occasionally?
I may currently have some Easter chocolate next to my desk, but that's really a life survival skill at this point. It's, you know, okay. But there, yeah, for sure there is. And this, it's funny because when I was doing a lot of freelance work and that was the main focus of my day, I would have goals and I would set goals. Okay, I need today, in order to manage my time and my client load, I would set, I need to write 3 articles today because I've got, you know, this many more that I need to accomplish this week. And so the same thing goes with writing, although it is challenging to say, okay, be creative now.
Yeah, it is creative. That's tough, that one.
So that it's different, but I wouldn't change anything. I mean, maybe ask me a year from now and I'll say, ah.
I have a writer friend that had a deadline on a book, and he kept missing the deadline, and the publisher was getting really shitty with him after a while, and he said, okay, I'll do something. And he's a coach. So he should have known how to do this. And he eventually ended up with getting a friend around. He said, look, I've got to get this thing. Let's come up with some threats that make me get this thing done. So the guy said, so how much money would hurt? He said, what do you mean? He said, well, if I took some money off you, what would hurt? He said, I guess 500 quid, I guess. I mean, I'm going to take it away. He says, all right. So he said, bring £500 of cash and come and see me. So he even got some 500 quid of cash out. And the guy got some envelopes and he put money in different envelopes. And he says, right, that's chapter 1. That's chapter 2. That's chapter 3. If you don't meet the deadline, I burn it.
Ouch. Anyway.
Yeah. And he said, like, he's like, when you know there's £100 sitting in an envelope and you've got to write for it, he said, you know, all right, it's only 100 quid. He said, I could afford to lose it. He said, but it was a rule. Like, I don't want to burn the envelope. And he said, I had to burn one of them. He said, it really stinks. You burn money.
Well, you know, and so, I mean, with anything, whether you're writing a book or you're trying to build a company or you're trying to launch a new idea or, you know, whatever you're doing, you know, if you're trying to get in shape, it really is the same principles at work there. You need to be consistent. And I joke that one of my superhero powers would be consistency. So I decided, I don't even remember how long ago it was, maybe a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, that I was going to start running. And I hate running. Like, I loathe it. It's so boring. But I'm like, okay, it is the most efficient way to get exercise. I don't have a lot of time. I don't want to get out of my pajamas and get fancied up to go to a gym, to drive to a gym, to then work out, to then come home, to get back into my pajamas. I suppose I could actually wear normal clothes, but that doesn't seem fun. And to get exercise. So I'm like, I'm just going to stagger out my front door, run around, come home, and then I can be at my desk and work. And so I just decided to do that. And I took steps to, and I put those steps in place, not burning money, but I have my workout clothes and they hang on the door of the ensuite bathroom. So literally I stagger in there and they're there and they stay there until they're too gross. And then I wash them and put them back in there. But literally if I didn't do that, I would come up with excuses because I hate running.
And how far do you run now? How far can you run?
I don't know, because I've never run farther than I ran the first day, because my goal wasn't to start running far. It was just to run. So I run, my goal is to run 5 out of 7 days a week, but I always run the same route. And I have a routine. I have music. I switch it on, and then on the way back, I listen to podcasts around writing. So writing, learning podcasts, so that I can get my brain into the next mode, which is the next part of my day, which is to sit down and in front of my computer and write.
Mm-hmm. As they say, the hardest thing about writing is getting your ass in the chair.
Yes. Oh, yes, because you can come up with 1,000 more things to do. And it's, and I mean, I have 15 years of being disciplined on motivating myself. And I have rules. I have home office rules, like one of my rules. And I realized how ingrained this rule had become when my daughter stayed home from school because she was sick. And the first thing she did is switch on the TV, and my brain went, that's against the rules. It's office hours. You can't have the TV on during office hours. Like that's, I just never, ever, ever turn on the TV during work time.
I've had to develop routines for working at home because the washing basket sings to me. So it's like, you know, I kind of come out my office and I go, oh, I could put some washing on. Good night. It's a nice day. And so I do put some washing on, and then the washing machine finishes and I look out and sun's shining. But I get the washing on the line. And it's like, you know, and these little jobs take away from what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yes. Yeah. And so, one of the other things, for a freelancer, I mean, I can do as much laundry as I want during the day. I'm not going to get paid for it. So, hey. So I used to set, now it's shifted to word count goals versus billable time goals. But I used to set like, okay, today my goal or this week my goal is to have X number of billable hours. So that means if I'm doing things that aren't productive for my clients, then I'm not billing that time. And then I'm not meeting my goal. And just having those, you know, okay, wow, the morning flew by and I only have one billable hour and I set the goal at 5 today. The afternoon, I really need to tape myself to the chair because, you know, I got to get it done. And, you know, it's, you sort of, you know, pick away at those goals. And
so do you have a weekly word count?
I have a really neat software program. It what you do is you put in your deadline, you put in your word count goal, like for the whole thing, and then it calculates what your daily target should be. You also tell it how many days a week you're planning on writing. So if you're only going to write 5 days a week, for me the weekends are impossible. Then it calculates for you how many words you need to write that day. So it takes it out of it. But yes, I do. And it changes. Right. Although I should maybe up it to...
You want to share it? What's your weekly goal?
What's my daily goal? If I set just a word count goal, it's about 1,000 words.
Oh, which is not too bad, 1,000 words. That's quite doable, 1,000 words.
Well, and if it was writing an article for the magazine or for a client, I would say to write 1,000 words would be 2 hours of time for how fast I write. Writing 1,000 words of fiction is not 2 hours of time. It is more. today, for example, because I can tell you. So today I wrote 235 words, but they were lovely. But it was, there was a lot of...
They were lovely words. I love that.
They were, and actually that was what stalled me today was I was really getting fussy with, I just wanted, I was, you know, falling into the trap of, I just wanted this one little paragraph to be perfect. And so I fussed around with it versus just trying to crank out the words. But I'm at, I will tell you what my word count is. I'm at 73,941.
Well
so
done.
I'm almost done. So I'm getting to that stage of fussing around, and I should probably just crank out the last whatever number of words. My word count goal was 75,000, but I'm going to go over and then get back to editing. But I'm sort of editing and writing at the same time.
Yeah, which... that's not good. Not got good practice to do that, really. But hey, it's your process.
It is my process, and it's interesting because in the process of learning my process is I'm realizing what works for me, and I didn't know that until I sat down and started this project and was like, okay, I don't really know. If you ask me about writing a newsletter article or a web page or a brochure or a technical white paper or whatever you have, I'm like, I know exactly how I'm going to do that. But writing a big, empty something, that was like, where do I start? I guess at the beginning. But do I start at the beginning? Do I start at the end?
The challenge for me, I think, on fiction is that you got to keep notes and tab everything, because if you introduce a character somewhere, you've got to kind of solve those connections.
Yes. And that when I said that writing 1,000 words a day takes more than 2 hours, sometimes part of that is going back and going, okay, I know I referred
was he
to something.
Was he left-handed or right-handed? Yeah. I can't remember.
I need to find the scene that I talk about the details so that when I talk about this other thing and this later scene that I need to read it and find that. And where did I put that scene? And I actually use a software program called Scrivener, and it's fabulous. If anybody is ever going to be writing anything that is longer, you know, like longer than an essay, I would recommend using something that has some of the writer formatting tools. And there are a few of them out there, but Scrivener.
I've heard of Scrivener, and it does. And the good thing about it is it allows you to keep notes of that sort of stuff, doesn't it? Which is really useful.
Yeah. As far as I understand from people who told me about it, it was created by a writer to function the way you think as a writer. And so you can go into a view that looks like kind of like a cork board, and you can put up little recipe cards of notes and sort of organize your ideas that way. So it's quite, it's fantastic. And then if you're like, oh, this scene needs to move here, and you can sort of pick up that whole recipe card of the scene and move it. So it's got some really neat features there, but that's maybe a bit of a tangent. So we should get back to the passion part.
We probably should get back to it. So tell me, what the future hold for you? Is it? Are you thinking of becoming an author full time?
What does the future hold for me? Retirement. What does retirement look like? A lot like authoring. So, you know, if I had to pick something I was going to do in retirement, it would probably be writing / traveling. And so I sort of refer to this phase of my life, my career, my whatever you want to call it, as pre-retirement. So I'm practicing. I'm getting ready. I'm trying to find the maybe I don't some
forgive me.
Call.
I don't see you as close to retirement. But I wouldn't dare ask how old you were. But I mean, I don't see you as that close.
Well, ish, close-ish. I'm a Girl Scout at heart, and I like to be prepared. So I'm practicing. And you know, some people might refer to this stage as maybe my second career. So shifting from one career that is, you know, maybe wrapping up a little, maybe it's morphing, but to a different career. So if I was fortunate enough, lucky enough to become a published author, would I become an author? Absolutely.
So what is success to you? How do you define success?
That's an interesting question, because one of my pet peeves when I started the entrepreneurial magazine was that there was a lot of the guru industry, as I call it, was really out there. There's a lot of different things. Come and learn our mega success seminar, wealth, blah, stuff. And, you know, and I went to some of those. And what I really felt, irked about was that they would say, look, if you're not making six figure or $1 million, if you're not building a multi-million-dollar business, you don't have success. And I thought, that is bullshit. So when we came up with the concept of the magazine, and we is more the royal we, one of the things that was really important to me and really emphasized was success on your terms. Because for a lot of mom entrepreneurs, and again, this is, I guess, another one of my passions, is that success maybe isn't a multi-million-dollar business. It is being able to fund an annual family vacation while still being available for your kids, so that you can be there when they leave for school, when they come home, and that sort of thing. So for me, that success, there's not a number, there's not a thing. For me, success is being, having the freedom, the flexibility. And that's the thing, you know, when I said that I wanted my daughter to become an entrepreneur, I wanted her to have the freedom that we've had. My husband was corporate for a long time. We moved to the West Coast, and he left corporate and he became a contractor as well, and which is exciting, nerve-wracking a little, but you know, now we both have freedom, so he can take off time during the day to come and do something, you know, a science fair at my daughter's school. I've taken time off during the day because I'm coaching Ultimate Frisbee at my daughter's school. I have that freedom. And so when you ask me about what success is, it's that. It's that I can make a good living doing what I want, wearing what I want, working with people who are fun and interesting and appreciate me. Because in the corporate world, the appreciation is sometimes lacking. And do it so that if I'm like, I need to sleep in today, or I need to not work today, or I need to not work for the next 2 weeks or month or whatever, that is success for me. I don't know if that answers the question.
It does answer it, because I have a similar outlook on it. But you know, we are told success is a fast car, a large house, and a pool.
Yes.
That's the kind of, but I wonder if that measure of success changes. And a lot of my other interviewees have said at a point in time, they did actually look for those things. And it was only as they got closer and closer to them, did they realize how pointless they were.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And, you know, and it's funny, a song lyric that jumps to mind is, it's from the band Metric. I'll send you a link to the song so you can listen to it later. But their one song line is, if you own it, it owns you. And, you know, and then it's repeated. And it's like, it's, and you realize how much effort goes into maintaining the stuff that you own. And oh my gosh, and the car is broken. And, we just recently had to replace a heating system. Being an adult sucks. You know, and you're like, ah, you know, and you can see, like, I've read things that talk about how the next generation they're not even wanting to own houses. And I'm like, that for our generation of people who that was the pinnacle of accomplishment blows my mind. And yet I look at that and go, That must feel like just relief. Like, wow, to not have to worry about a heating system failing or refrigerator, or currently my microwave is haunted, so it turns on by itself. So we leave the door open so it doesn't burn our house down. That would be so cool, right? So, you know, I don't know where we started with this tangent, but
no, I don't know where we started with this tangent either. And I'm curious how we got here, but I'm happy to be here wherever we are. So yeah, it is this thing about success is what you make it, or what you want for it. You know, and it's different for every person. And that's been very clear from all the conversations I've had so far.
You know, and it's interesting, like I joined a fitness for over a certain age group. And
are you over a certain age then?
I am over a certain age. And and they first thing they said, what are your goals? And my husband and I have always been very active. Like before we had our daughter, you know, we did backcountry skiing and we played a lot of ultimate frisbee, you know, hiking and biking and all sorts of crazy stuff. But as I get over the certain ages, I realize that my fitness goals are just to be able to maintain and continue doing the things that I like doing. So not injuring myself by doing something crazy, so that I can keep skiing and hiking and other things that we like to do.
That sounds good. Mm-hmm. So how do you maintain your passion? How do you stay passionate?
How do I stay passionate? You know, as a writer, we're fragile creatures. I'm not going to lie. But there are moments, and so for today, for example, when I was fussing around with this part that I was writing, is I went back and I read it, and I read what I wrote, and I was like, yeah, I don't know, I'll probably change my mind about it tomorrow and say that it's terrible, but today I was like, oh, that's pretty good, like, you know, good job, you. So for me, that's part of how I maintain my passion, is I step back and I take pride in what I do. And I look at, wow, and I save from clients. I have a folder called Nice Notes. So when they send me nice notes that say, that was so amazing, thank you so much, that was great, oh, you saved the day, I save those, because you know, everybody has days where they're like, oh, I have to write about oil field tubular goods. And so you need those reminders. You need that, you know, for me, sometimes the reminder is having the business owner who says, oh my gosh, you do not know how much writing our company brochure was stressing me out. You save the day, and that helps, because especially for if we're entrepreneurs and for solopreneurs, we're often on our own by definition. So we don't get that feedback. And yes, we can give ourselves pats on the back, but sometimes it's just we're toiling away on our own. So you need to step back and have that moment of reflection and realize, okay, wow, yeah, the thing that I'm really good at is hard for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have helped them in a way that they could not have helped themselves. Like I recently helped a friend name her business, and I was the mirror, and I was reflecting back what she could not see herself. And I said, this is not what your business is about. It is about this. And she was like, oh, you're right. And so having those little gems, that gets you excited about it. And that gives you the pride. And that, you know, again, especially as a writer, when for as many times as I hear, yay, you, I also hear, well, anyone can write. Why do we need to hire a writer? Everyone can write.
Did you always have a passion for writing?
Yes.
Ever
Absolutely.
Since?
Yeah. In fact, in junior high, my best friend and I would hang out, and she would be doodling and drawing, and she would replicate album covers. And I would sit and write probably angry poetry, and angry teenage poetry, which is, thank goodness, I don't know where any of it is. it would be good for a laugh, though.
When you're a famous author, it'd be very valuable.
Yeah. and she went on to go to art college and became an art teacher, and I went on to become a writer. So we sort of took those things that we had in our youth, and we turned them into careers. And it wasn't the career that we thought it would be, but that's okay too. Like, I think if I had a career counselor who had said, because I thought I would become a journalist, and then I had somebody say, let's call her Dream Wrecker Lady. She said to me, do you really want to go to a family who's lost their child and stick a microphone in their face and ask them how they feel about it? And I'm like, no. that crushed my dream of becoming a journalist. And I was like, that wasn't what I wanted. But if I had had a career counselor who said, that's not the only thing you can do with words, that's not the only way you can make money by writing, here's the list of possibilities, I think I would have been a much happier young person, you know, with that knowledge, because there was some moments of angst. Well, I was like, I can't become a journalist because that's horrible, and I'm not going to become a starving artist, and what am I going to do?
So we've been talking for 44 minutes, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you about this, and I have got one more question for you. Well, maybe two. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have done?
That you haven't? So choose your own question, your own adventure question.
Well, what it's about this question, you see, is because I think people will have these interviews and they kind of go, I wish I'd said this. And this question just gives you an open opportunity.
They always have them in hindsight. But, you know, when I was thinking about the interview, I was really thinking about, you know, success and passion and stuff. And for me, it comes back, and we've talked about it, it comes back to lifestyle. You know, I look at a lot of careers and I think, well, that would be really cool to be a, you know, insert interesting traditional career here, doctor, lawyer, you know, et cetera. And I'm like, oh, but the lifestyle seems kind of shitty. And, you know, and I think as a philosophy graduate, that's my degree is in, we spend a lot of time thinking about how we live, and it's really, you know, how you go through life, what you put into your life. You know, there's the, what everybody says, like, you're never going to want to work more when you're on your deathbed. And perhaps the people who you're interviewing, as they're reaching their so-called goals in life, are realizing that they were empty goals. So, you know, I think it is true. I think you do have that perspective on life, that you're not, it's not the car. Car is something that you put yourself in to protect you while you are going from A to B. And thank goodness I view it that way, because often my car gets quite dinged up on the door or scratched, and I have little, where did that red paint come from? Like, you know, someone opens their door a little violently and you're like, But it's really how you go through life and what you put into it. And it's the sunsets. I marvel at them.
It is interesting that you've come to this point in this conversation, because I always ask this about this point in the conversation. And it's that I have come to this podcast because, as I said, I had questions. And one of the biggest questions I have is, like, what's it all for? I spend my life eating, drinking. You know, we have spent eating, drinking, having families, seeing friends, making money. But there must be more to this. And so I guess the last question I always ask is, you know, for you, what is the meaning of life? And as a philosophy graduate, you must have a really good answer.
Oh, the pressure.
Actual fact, it's about experience, isn't it, really? I think.
Yeah. You know, and like, you know, I'm looking out and I see fluffy white clouds and trees. And I actually, this is one of the things that I think, in a way, Instagram has been a gift, because it forces me to stop and go, look at that tiny moss that looks like a mini forest. I'm going to take a picture of it because other people would find it interesting. And it, you notice those little moments. So last year we had a little snail, and he was like, he wasn't our pet, although I do name any animal that comes anywhere near my house. And he had, he'd worked his way up our front step. Like, yeah, I'm sure it took him a long time. And I'm like, hey, little dude, how are you? I'm going to take your photo because you're neat. And I think, you know, finding the, like, the big, beautiful sunsets and the teeny snails and, you know, all of those things, like noticing what you, when you have a child, like a young child, what you notice for them. And I read books on their neurological development that explains this, but they don't filter anything. They see everything. They see, they're like, oh, look at this and this and this and this and this. And you're like, I didn't notice any of those things. I didn't see any of that. And they see all of it. And then we sort of focus our world down and we make it smaller and smaller and smaller because it's more convenient and efficient, and it's the our brain can't process that information. But so the meaning of life is, I guess, to notice things, to look and to see and to have those moments where you're like, wow, that's a cool sunset. I know I saw one just yesterday, but today, cool in a different way. And, you know, or this is a snail, or we have a bat that lives in our patio umbrella. And so we named him Nathan because he's cute. And so you have those things, those moments that you're in awe of the world and life and what's around you. And so the meaning of life, I guess, is just to notice things and pay attention.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a great place to end our conversation, I think, because you seem to, it does encapsulate it. And it is about, for me, you know, I'd agree with you, it is about observing and noticing. So you are an author at the moment, and you are not taking on new work, or?
No, I do still work for clients who are savvy enough to find me.
So if anyone would like to get in touch with you, and so you can write about their pipes for them, would you be up for that?
For writing about, I don't know if I have it in me to write about oil field tubular goods again, but certainly people, you know, I would say social media is still probably the best way to find me. I'm still at Carla Young on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm the same on both, which is kind of nice because I'm not the same on Pinterest, which is a bit of a bugaboo for me. But that's the best way to find me. And I'm willing to be found.
Oh, good. Well, thank you, Carla Young. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And we'll catch up again soon, I'm sure.
Yes, thank you so much.
That's great.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Carla Young. As with all my guests, contact details can be found on the website lifepassionandbusiness.com under the relevant podcast. While at the site, why not join the email community to receive an overview of the shows and up-and-coming guests? I'm currently working on a project with Lisa Avery. We're looking to create resources to help you on your journey towards passion and greater meaning in your life. And finally, while I'm looking for answers, it will be good to change the world. These questions are important for everyone to consider. Please spread the word and share this podcast. Thanks for listening. I will catch you later.